Okay, I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:05 a.m. on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. And present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Ortiz, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. And we have six bills on this morning's docket. Four of them were added from yesterday's schedule. So we've been trying to take the bills in the order in which they were originally scheduled. So we left off yesterday with our next bill being SB 29, Senate Bill 29, that's Civics Education. And then hopefully we can get over to Senate Bill 34, that's Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. That may be all the time we have if we can, because we do have a hard stop at 10 o'clock this morning. Next up after that will be Senate Bill 91, Telehealth, and then Senate Bill 95, License Plate Specialty Organizations and Peace Officers. And then the last of the five will be Senate Bill 99, Financial Literacy Programs in Schools, and then Senate Bill 228, Extend Board of Massage Therapists. And so, again, just for folks who, let's see, next up we've got Representative Galvin, Representative Colombe, and so first up we've got Senate Bill 29, Civics Education. I'd like to invite Senator Stevens or his staff, Mr. Tim Lampkin, to please come to the table and put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Also presenting will be Ms. Lisa Boudreau, Director of State Policy for Civics, iCivics, and available for questions is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director of Innovation and Education Excellence at Department of Education. So with that, Mr. Lampkin. And we also have with us Mr. Representative Kronk. Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Unfortunately, Senator Stevens was called away on other duties for the Senate. Very grateful to have you hear this bill. I respect and understand the time constraint that we're on. Just very briefly, many of you, or at least some of you, are acquainted with this bill, as it's been something Senator Stevens has worked on for many, many years. It's an effort to, among many, needed to restore faith and understanding in our system of government by our younger generation. This bill calls for the creation of some civics curriculum, required exam, or a project-based assessment for completion of a civics program for graduating seniors. As repeatedly said by Senator Stevens, it's not a high-stakes test, but it's a high-stakes issue. With this bill, he hopes to rekindle a spirit within our education system to help foster citizenship, voting, and community engagement, which is being a fundamental purpose of our public education system. That's a very brief introduction of the bill. I'm happy to go through it itself if you wish, sectional, or address any questions.
Okay, thank you. I'd just like to note that we also have with us Representative Hannon. And was Ms. Boudreau going to do invited testimony or anything?
Mr. Chairman, so previously we had two individuals under invited testimony. Ms. Boudreau represents sort of a national picture of this effort, and we have a former Chancellor, U.S. Chancellor John Pugh, who I believe is also online, if we could include him. I've asked them both to be brief, maybe 2 to 3 minutes each.
Okay, thank you. It looks like Mr. Pugh was on, but may not be on now. I just want to double check. Is Mr. Pugh online? No, he's not online. Okay. If he does come back online, we can bring him on. I'll go over to Ms. Kelly Manning. Ms. Manning, are you here in the room or online? It says location Juneau, but it might be online in Juneau. Is that Ms. Manning, are you there?
Yes, good morning. This is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for Division of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education.
I am so very sorry. I meant to say Ms. Lisa Boudreau. Sorry about that. looks like Ms. Boudreau, you're in Washington, D.C. Are you there?
Yes, thank you so much.
And if you could put yourself on the record, just state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, the co-chairs and the members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak. I'm really happy to be here with you this morning. My name is Lisa Boudreau, and I'm the Director of State Policy at CivicsNow. It's a project of iCivics. We are a national coalition focused on strengthening K-12 civic education. During this brief two-minute testimony, I will share a snapshot of the national policy picture. I'd like to reference for the record that the bill filed for previous hearings includes really in-depth testimony. We offer the most promising bipartisan long-term plan with policy recommendations. Among these recommendations, we suggest access to more professional development for civic educators, proper assessment for teachers, among several other categories. The most important of our policy recommendations is that we need to spend more time on civics in school. Civics has been neglected over the past 50 years. The Council of Chief State School Officers estimates that 44% of districts have cut back on instructional time for social studies over the last 20-year period. Studies show a significant drop in American knowledge of government and basic rights. Test scores have also dropped. The good news? There's strong bipartisan support for improvement. Two-thirds of voters, including Republicans and parents, want more civic education in schools. State legislators have noticed, too. In the past biennium, 21 measures across 23 different states have been passed to improve K-12 civics. In this session alone, I'm tracking 151 civic ed bills across 33 states. 109 of those bills follow our organization's policy recommendations. SB 29, sponsored by Senator Stevens, reflects this national trend. It would require dedicated civics course time in high school as a graduation requirement, paired with either a test or a project-based assessment. This bill's core idea, more time on civics in the classroom, is the solution to what ails our nation. I urge you to please pass this important measure, and thank you, and I welcome any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. First, I'll go to public testimony. I don't believe we have anyone, but we'll come back to questions here in a moment. So with that, I'll go ahead and open public testimony on SB 29, which is civics education. And if anyone would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who would like to testify? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public testimony for SB 29, Civics Education. And do we have any questions for the bill sponsor or for Ms. Boudreaux, Representative Hannon?
Thank you. I'll start with Ms. Boudreaux, Chair Foster. Thank you. Ms. Boudreaux, how many states do curriculum directions as a statewide effort? So not just civics, but say, does the state of Alabama oversee and put into statute what math curriculums are offered? At our state level, we have 54 school districts, and most of the decisions are made at school districts. So I'm looking for a comparison at how many states do it at the state level versus the district level.
That's a really good question. Thank you so much. I appreciate your question. So right now, there are 37 states in D.C. that mandate a high school course. Curriculum choices are often at the local level. Most states are local control. And there are some states that are involved in helping develop a curriculum, but usually recruit teachers from the community and from districts to help write that curriculum.
Well, so of those 37 states that require a civics course, are those states also ones that go through other areas of course requirements to that detail versus just saying you need 4 credits in social studies to graduate? They've said you need civics to graduate. Do they also do that with math in those 37 states and science? Or are you only aware of social studies?
So my expertise is in the civic space, so I'm unable to answer the question regarding other academic subjects. But in high school, it's 37 states. In middle school, there are 11 states that mandate civics.
Thank you.
And Mr. Lampkin?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, Staff to Senator Stephen, through the chair, Representative Hannah. I also want to point out that in your packet should be a file labeled what other states are doing. That should go into some detail as to state by state what other components of civics, but have to concur our focus at this time is just on civics requirements.
Can I?
Oliver?
Mr. Lampkin, could I ask him a question, which is, do you, through the chair, do you know how many school districts in Alaska already require government or civics to graduate?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the last time I looked, granted this may be dated by a couple of years, but every school district has a requirement of social studies taking. But to my knowledge, the only there was only one district that specifically specified civics. The word civics.
So follow up. So you're not counting government as a civics class?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, arguably government class could focus on history and not necessarily project and public engagement with governance systems. That's kind of the thrust of the heartbeat of the bill, is to encourage our upcoming generations to be more engaged in our system of government.
Yeah, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Ortiz, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Boudreaux. Ms. Boudreaux, do the national efforts do what this bill does and focus attention on communist regimes that suppress speech instead of right-wing regimes like Vladimir Putin's that suppress speech?
Yes, sir. So thank you for that question. I believe the bill sponsor has included language on comparative systems of government addressing the intent of language concerning communist regimes. And that'll be my statement on that. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm just taken aback by the right-wing Putin comment there just a minute ago. This looks, I'm just reading some of the things in this bill. And remembering, you know, when you see on the news, you know, big groups of demonstrators and tearing down things and, you know, destroying our cities within the United States. And I've seen these folks, and they have a picture of Fidel Castro on their T-shirt, right? And like saying this was a great guy. And you know, when I see things like that, I go, you know, we really do need a course on civics, and to really, you know, get out there that these people starve. You know, with this list on here, Mao Zedong, Lenin, Stalin, Castro, Pol Pot, they basically murdered over 100 million people in the last century. And people don't realize that. They starve their people to death. It was systemic lethal violence. I mean, this stuff needs to be taught in our schools. And I'm glad that you brought this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we've got Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Mr. Lampkin, I'm looking for it, and it's probably in here, but if this bill were to be adopted, it's my understanding that graduating seniors would either need to pass a civics-orientated test or take a course. Is that, and do we have a copy of what that test might look like?
Mr. Lampkin?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, in your packet should also be a sample test of the U.S. immigration that's given to folks coming in seeking citizenship. It's a 120-question exam. I think Senator Stevens over the years has given you the exam with the expectation to turn it in to see how well you perform. It is a very generic test, arguably quite easy. There's about an 80% success rate for immigrants coming in. That is a test. I want to clarify, though, please, that the new language of the bill would require, number one, to take a civics course and either pass that written exam that you referenced or complete a project-based assessment to engage in their local governance system, whether that be, say, student government, pass a no bubble gum in class policy, or engage the city council to put in a dog park or a speed bump or a stop sign, that sort of thing. Ways to help our young incoming generation to how to engage with their government system. Civics generally is a simple Google definition, is the study of the rights, privileges, and duties of citizenship within your system of government.
Oliver?
I can appreciate that, being a former social studies teacher, 32-year teacher. I certainly can understand the value of trying to promote that kind of understanding amongst our students. Under the law, does the course need to be titled civics, or can it be titled American government? Like in my school, we have a required course that's a semester of American government and a semester of street law. And I know that within both venues, this kind of education, although maybe not directly geared in the same way, addresses these kinds of things. And citizen, you know, like one of the requirements is to attend local school board and or city government meetings, et cetera, and those kinds of things. So does it need to be titled civics, or can it be titled other things? And who is the gatekeeper on something like this under your bill?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't believe Senator Stevens would object to it being titled whatever, provided that the content of civics is some component of that course. I hope that answers your question.
Final question?
Representative Ortiz?
And then if this were a law to be passed, again, who would be the gatekeeper? Would this be DEED that would determine whether or not the courses that were offered in throughout the state of Alaska fulfilled the requirements of SB 29? Or who would make that decision?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. So the bill reads that that DEED would develop the curriculum and an assessment, and that districts may use that curriculum and assessment to fulfill the requirements of that, and that there be a component on their transcript that would indicate that they've completed it upon graduation. So the gatekeeper would ultimately be DEED to verify that course in their transcripts has that box has been checked.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Just a reminder for the folks who arrived a little later, we've got a 9 or 10 o'clock hard stop. And also, before we go to questions, I just want to maybe run back to Ms. Kelly Manning. We just have one fiscal note. And Ms. Manning, if you could put yourself on the record and walk us through that.
Good morning. My name is Kelly Manning. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education. I have the fiscal note for OMB component 2796. This is a $276,000 one-time fiscal note, and that has two pieces to it. One is $6,000 for legal fees, just for updating our regulations. And then the department would convene an educator working group and hire a facilitator to support the department in developing the assessment and curriculum. We would also review our statewide social studies standards and ensure that they are aligned to all of the components in the bill. So the cost for this would be the upfront work to get the course and assessment developed and make it available to districts.
Great. Thank you very much. So questions both for the sponsor and for the fiscal note. We'll go to Representative Josephson and then Representative Hannon.
Through the chair, Mr. Lampkin, I am and have been since 1991 a history-endorsed teacher, and I am through 2028. I don't use it, but it's there. And I take the teaching of history incredibly seriously, and I read it constantly. In fact, we're expanding our house to make room for more books. My concern is mostly with subsection B at the top of page 2. So what I'm concerned with is this. For example, the focus is exclusively on bad, admittedly very bad, left-wing regimes, if the phrase left-wing is helpful. But what I don't see here, here's my question. If I were teaching under these requirements, would I be allowed to say, for example, about Mao Zedong, that his predecessor was the corrupt Chiang Kai-shek, backed by the United States government, who was insensitive to poverty in his country. And immediately after the close of World War II, the revolution began. Would I, in other words, would I be able to provide some context? So none of these regimes just happen organically. They happen because of things going on. In the case of Vladimir Lenin, you have people opposed to a needless World War I directed by dynasties who were just fighting for their own self-aggrandizement and colonial power, where millions died absolutely needlessly. In the case of Fidel Castro, you have the corrupt Batista regime that we backed before that. So there's a broader, a much broader story to be told. Could a teacher feel comfortable telling that story?
Mr. Lampkin?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, thank you for the question. You know, in college, political theory was, with a poli-sci degree, that was one of my favorite courses. And we could spend quite some time discussing these things in depth. I don't believe that that the language in Section B there would preclude conversation of any of these other comparative systems of government or their regimes. The prior committee wanted to see that that was in the bill to make sure at least these six subject matters were covered. If I could, please, furthermore, that Section A, interest in a compromise and comprehensive would be on line 11, the inclusion to the extent practicable comparative systems of government used around the world. So that would include any regime and any system of government that okay. you can conceive of.
All right. So I feel, through the chair, Mr. Lampkin, I feel very naive suddenly because this is a CS, and I thought this is how Senator Stevens had drafted it. But he didn't, and that's all I need to know. Thank you.
I'd just like to also note that we have with us Representative Co-Chair Johnson. Next question to Representative Hannon, and then staff, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. My question is for Ms. Manning at the Department of Education. Ms. Manning, do you know how many school districts of our 54 already require government, American government, or a civics course to graduate high school in Alaska?
For the record, this is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. And Representative Hannon, I will have to get back to you and see what we have, but we do not collect that information as far as I know. I do know that many of our districts do, but I can find out what we have available as far as data.
Thank you.
Representative Stepp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Okay, so let me start by saying that I think the subsection B is a fantastic bill, portion of the bill. I don't think it goes far enough. I would ask I know you're not the sponsor of the bill, Mr. Lampkin, but I would strike the word communist and insert the word Marxist socialist, because all of these ideologies have one common theme in mind. They are all disciples of Marxist socialist ideology. So I think it's important for kids in Alaska schools to understand why Marxist socialism is catastrophically devastating for not only the welfare of humankind, but people all over the earth. I think I, too, studied history my entire life. It's a bit of a passion. I would say that the things that the member from Anchorage said regarding Chiang Kai-shek, by the way, the president of the Kuomintang, the founder of modern China, under the successor of Sun Yat-sen, were probably a little unfair given the context of the World War II and China's history, but I think it's important for kids to study that. I would also ask as a second portion, as if the maker would be open to adding a document called The Magyar Struggle, published by Joseph Engels in Die Neue Rechte Zeitung and Karl Marx. That's their newspaper after the revolutions of 1848 that explicitly links Marxism, socialism, to ethnic and social hierarchy. And the reason I think that's important, Mr. Co-Chair, is the Magyar Struggle, again written by Engels, concludes by saying that, quote, the next world war will result in the disappearance from the face of the earth, not only reactionary classes and dynasties, but of entire reactionary peoples. And that, too, is a step forward. And I think that kids should know that Marxist-Leninism, excuse me, Marxist-Socialism, encouraged the eradication of what Marx and Engels called for as backwards reactionary peoples. And they're also named in that article. So those are my two questions. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster.
Was that, I think you said that was for Ms. Boudreau?
No, Mr. Lampkin. Two questions. Amendment.
Mr. Boudreau. I mean, Mr. Lampkin.
Through the chair, representative staff, at this time, we're happy to take such a question into consideration.
Thanks.
Representative Galvin?
Thank you. This is a question for Ms. Boudreau, I believe. It sounds like you have a lot of experience in bringing forth civics education in many states. And my question is in looking at this bill, I'm seeing what, well, it seems to be a bit more history than, you know, democracy today and how I might be an engaged citizen. But maybe I am just not familiar enough with these programs. So would you give me a little bit of context as to how common it is to include a mandatory 3 hours of instruction on Mao Zedong and Chinese Cultural Revolution, Vladimir Lenin and Russian Revolution, Stalin and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and so on? Is that something that's common in a civics class?
Ms. Boudreau?
Thank you for that question, through the chair. That is not common language in civic education legislation across the board. I believe that was language added by the previous committee and not part of the original bill, but again, from my understanding, that is not typical language, although it has been presented in some legislatures.
Thank you, and I will ask then, when you add an additional 3 hours of study on history, is there still enough space in the class time for high schoolers to be inclusive of the other things that I've been reading about, which are kind of exciting to learn about? That is, how old should I be when I vote? Where can I vote? How often do I vote? What can I do to make a difference if I want to see the street signs changed? Kind of understanding the process of government as it's relevant to a person's life at particularly age 18. So is there space for this other piece that you've added and space for what I've just shared with you that I think of as being quite important if we want to have our 18-year-olds voting?
Ms. Boudreau?
Thank you so much for that question, through the chair. I am unable to answer that question. It would be probably a question for Department of Education to determine whether or not every classroom would have that kind of time. I'm sorry that I can't provide you with a more specific answer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And with that, unless there's anything else from the sponsor of the bill, I am going to set an amendment deadline for SB 29 of Thursday, May 9th at 5 p.m. Again, that's Thursday, May 9th at 5 p.m. And so with that, thank you very much, Mr. Lampkin. So next, we're going to take up Senate Bill 34. That's the Citizen Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And I'd like to invite up, I don't believe the senator is, oh, there he is, Senator Kaufman, as well as his staff, Emma Torkelson. Please come to the table and put yourself on the record and begin your presentation. Also available for questions we have in person is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. Online, we have Tina Cunning, Special Assistant to the Commissioner of State and Federal Issues. Also online, Stan Liepart, former CACFA Executive Director. And so we'll first take the introduction, and then we'll go over to public testimony and the fiscal notes and questions. So with that, Senator Kaufman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. For the record, James Kaufman, Senator for District F in Anchorage. And I want to thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. This bill reestablishes the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. and I believe the bill has, the committee has discussed this bill's companion, HB 83, and so I'm prepared to reintroduce the bill, give a brief reintroduction in entirety, or move directly to the changes that were made as we worked this bill in the Senate.
Maybe if you could just give us a brief introduction just to summarize and get folks thinking in the same direction, and then we could go into the changes. Senator Kaufman?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, there's been a lot of water under the bridge, so it would probably be helpful. So to briefly recap, the commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator, and one representative. The commission's role is to represent the views of Alaska citizens concerning federal land management plans within the state. So the commission holds hearings to collect public comment on decisions that affect them, disseminates information about old and new regulations to the public, the executive branch, and the legislature, monitors the Federal Register, regularly submits written comments in response to actions that affect Alaska, works proactively with federal agencies to resolve issues, helps Alaskans navigate federal permitting processes. And so that's a summary of what the bill does. But we worked this bill in the Senate. We did substantive committee work over the interim in order to engage with stakeholders. And so we differ with SB 34 in four substantive ways as opposed to HB 83. As Representative Rauscher noted in an earlier hearing, our offices, we worked these over the interim. And so the changes then were adopted in the Finance Committee version in the other body. So the first and second changes add language clarifying that CACFA is housed in DNR for administrative purposes only, and that the commission independently determines what issues they take up. This change came about because of concerns raised that CACFA was operating as just another arm of DNR to supplement ongoing work. The language we believe better clarifies that CACFA and its executive director operate independently of DNR and the issues that they take up and how they work those issues. The third change establishes that the 10 public non-legislative members must represent all four judicial districts, with no more than three members being from one district. And that is the purpose there is to improve the geographic distribution of representation. The fourth change designates that at least one seat on CACFA will be for a member of a federally recognized tribe and at least one seat for a shareholder of an ANCSA corporation. As large landowners and entities deeply invested in our state, the perspective of ANCSA corporations and Alaska tribes is an invaluable resource to the commission. And not only that, the tribes and the native corporations already work closely with the federal government, so they have good insight into those issues. The last change that we made was updating the effective date to July 1st, 2024. And so that's the summary of the bill and the summary of the changes that we made in committee. With that, we're happy to take questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Just would like to welcome the visitors that we have here watching your in-house finance today. And we're talking about Senate Bill 34, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. I would like to go to public testimony. I think we just have one or two people.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Josephson?
If I could just follow up on your previous comment. We had a tour, a number of us. I know Senator Kaufman was there on the USS William Lawrence, and I think this is their, I may have the title wrong, commander or captain or one of those, chief executive officer, something like that.
Thank you. We're just
sensing. Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much for your time. We'll get out of your way. We're going to do important stuff. Thank you very much, Councilman Donald.
Thanks for your service.
Thank you for joining us. Okay, and so we're going to go to public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony on SB 34. And if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none online, I believe we've got at least one person, maybe two. The other one might be for questions. But first we'll go to Charlie Lean, calling in from Nome. Mr. Lean, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. This is Charlie Lean in Nome. I've been traveling. I just got home and found that this was on. I'm a longtime Alaskan. I'm also a longtime member of the Citizen Advisory Council and the last acting chair of that body. I am enthusiastic about the changes making CACFA independent of DNR, or at least somewhat. The body's going to be dependent on clerical and administrative support, given the budget that's here. The director of CACFA will be overwhelmed with the administrative duties and his regular duties of interfacing with the public and the council itself. I like the idea of a statewide distribution of members and the inclusion of the Native members. And so I think all those things are valuable. The council in the past was pretty effective at speaking with federal land managers and expressing statewide concerns. One of the things that's unique with CACFA is that there is no other body that interfaces with the public on these issues. You can go piecemeal from agency to agency, either state or federal, and hope to get your foot in the door, but having an advocate and having multiple advocates in the case of CACFA to assist in that is a real boon to the Alaskan public. So the director is either a paralegal or a person with a law degree that has the expertise to deal with all the CFRs, all those regulations, all those statutes that are Greek to many of the public. And so I think one of the less understood facets of CACFA is the directorship and how important that person is to a member of the public that really needs assistance in dealing with the federal agencies or just understanding what's going on. So in the interest of brevity, I'll let it go there. But thank you, and I'm very much in favor of reinstating CACFA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lean. Do we have any questions for the testifier? I just want to say I didn't know Charlie was going to be calling in, but I didn't want to say he comes from a wonderful pioneer family in the region and just commands a lot of respect, not just in our community, but also in the entire region. So thank you very much for calling in, Mr. Lean. Is Ms. Tina Culling, were you available for questions or were you here for testimony? I believe.
This is Tina. I'm here available for questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. We just have one fiscal note, and then we'll go to questions of the committee. And so first up, we have Mr. John Crother, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Crother, if you could walk us through the department's fiscal notes.
Hello, members of the committee. For the record, John Crother, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Have a fiscal note here, OMB component number 2733, control code DNDRG, I believe, dated 5/5. As can be seen, we have a out-year cost of approximately $200,000 in operating expenditures. That's driven by the additional position that would serve as the executive director of the commission, with the salary, personal services occupying about 3/4 of that cost, and then naturally the associated commodities for that position to have workspace, necessary equipment, and some travel as necessary. So our expectation is that single position would have a fiscal impact of about $200,000 per year.
Okay, thank you very much. So next we'll go to questions, whether that be for the sponsor or regarding fiscal notes or public testifiers. And I don't know that if I technically opened public testimony. I'm going to say that I did. Oh, I did. Okay. But I just in case somebody else calls and I'll leave it open. And then when we close that here, I'll close it. So with that, questions for the sponsor? Okay. Seeing no Representative Trunk.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. I just want to thank Senator Kaufman for the work. This is definitely something people in my district have wanted, and to obviously we think we didn't quite make the deadline last time, and we're going to get this back in there. It's really important because we have so many federal areas and issues. Having an advisory committee to chime in and represent the people is valuable. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Galvin and then Stapp.
Yeah, thank you. I also want to thank you for this piece. In looking at the audit from the past, it looks like it was a worthwhile, important commission that also brought in the public in a fair way. I appreciate that it also said that there was not duplicity. So this is something that I'm not sure why it went away. I guess that would be my one question, because I think that if this would engender more public understanding and also participation so that we're sure that whatever comes to play, we're ready for it. I think it will alleviate legal issues if we continue on this road. But why, if you could share with me, if you know, why it went away, given that the audit certainly made it sound like it was a very reasonable commission.
Senator Kaufman?
Through the chair to Rep. Galvin, it was a funding crunch, essentially, and that happens. If I could, while I have a little bit of the floor, as far as the fiscal note, we see this as the intent is to act as a navigator. And as a navigator, I believe we can actually save money. I know that's often said in government, but I believe it could be true with this. But if you avoid a lawsuit, just think of the leveraging effect of the charges the cost that it keeps to maintain this board. If we can avoid just one lawsuit that we don't have to fight, we could end up actually, recouping more than the fiscal note in savings. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. And just so the public knows, I just want to reiterate something that Senator Kaufman said, which was that we did hear the House version of this bill on numerous occasions. So public watching might think this is a very quick process, but we've heard this bill various forms. So with that, we've got Representative Stapp and then Hannon. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster, the chair, to the bill sponsor, Senator Kaufman. I just wanted to thank you for bringing it forward. Obviously, it's kind of it's a big deal, CACFA. I think this commission is a great bill. I think it should have never probably been sunsetted. I think a lot of folks have missed out on really the complexity of land issues, not just for, recreational facilities and development facilities, but just in general, just to understand the complexity of all the different overlays of kind of federal land and state land and tribal land and corporation land and all that in the state. So I just wanted to thank you again for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And I'm not sure if my question is for Mr. Carruthers or Senator Kaufman, but when thinking about the litigation that it could prevent, has there been any discussions or intersect with the statehood defense funds that both DNR has in their budget and the Department of Law, and whether some of those funds would be funds that the CAFA Commission would have access to using if they needed to engage in litigation?
Senator Kaufman?
Through the chair, to Rep. Hannon. We see this as separate from statehood defense. Again, we see this more as a navigator, type resource that we have, as the Citizens Advisory Federal Area. So not really as an element of statehood defense. I believe Ms. Torkelson has some input on that.
And I believe those funds, just for clarification for folks, are housed in Department of Law, and I think those are geared toward court legal court cases, I suppose. But just throwing that in there, not to say that. Ms. Torkelson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman, through the chair to Representative Pannon. The process, CACFO, if they choose to recommend to the Department of Law to file a lawsuit, they make that recommendation, and then the Department of Law chooses whether or not to file that lawsuit. And if they choose, then that would go out of funds separate from CACFA. CACFA doesn't actually participate in the lawsuit after that. And then the fiscal note, as Mr. Brothers talked about, has $30,000 in out years available for CACFA to use, just to utilize Department of Law's resources for digging into a topic they don't know about, or seeking comment on a letter they're writing to make sure it's accurate, but wouldn't be used directly for lawsuit purposes.
One follow-up, and for the department, because I know that we did have some money in the Department of Natural Resources for the specialists needed if there was a potential for statehood defense funds, and I'm wondering if DNR has looked at that intersect. I mean, we don't, that money is there in case we need to engage, and I think part of the work and narrative around CAFCA is we want to prevent that, but we want to have the resources to engage in that. And so I'm wondering if DNR, when looking at having some of that statehood defense money put aside, it seems like some of that specialty land assessment knowledge is the same area of law that CAFCA potentially is looking at.
Mr. Crowther?
Yeah, Representative Hannon, through the chair, I to the degree I understand the question correctly, I think you're right that it's looking at the same areas of law and kinds of issues, or specifically the impact of land use activity regulation or land status on different uses by Alaskans. It's our department's understanding the role of the commission is to support public information sharing to the public and to receive public information about what's a priority, what's a need for the public. And so that's very important information for us, and having a formal commission to receive it and process it and deliver it to the department facilitates on those kinds of issues. But that's why the commission serves perhaps a bit of a distinct function from our current program. Programs and staff.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions for Senator Kaufman? Seeing none, Senator Kaufman, any closing comments before I set an amendment deadline?
Well, I just want to say thank you to the committee, both, you know, today and just going back over the past, you know, it's almost 2 years now on this effort with it. A lot of good people have put a bunch of good work into it. So I thank all of them. But I also want to tip my hat to Ms. Emma Torkelson, whose passion and work on this bill has just been incredible. So I just want to shout out for Emma. She's done incredible work on this and continues to do so. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman and Ms. Torkelson. So with that, I'm going to set an amendment deadline of Thursday, May 9th at 5 p.m. for Senate Bill 34, which is Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And so thank you very much, Senator Kaufman. So we've only got about 5 minutes left before a hard stop, and I was hoping we could do an introduction of the next bill, which is Senate Bill 91, telehealth, and then come back to it later. But in the interest of trying to keep everything together and not being fragmented, we'll hold off, and hopefully we can come back to this as soon as we can. Any chance we get, we'll seize the opportunity to get a little bit of finance time. So with that, I will, instead of adjourning, I'll recess. A couple things I wanted to say. First, we are under the 24-hour rule since the conference committee was organized, and that means that we only need to give 24-hour notice to notice meetings. We plan to notice a whole slew of meetings, bills, just to, so it's one less thing to do. So you'll see a whole bunch on there. The question, however, will be whether or not there's the time to get to them. But at least if we can schedule them, then that will get that out of the way. We do have quite a backlog. Out of the 9 bills that we have before us today, we just We just moved through two of them, so we've got a little ways to go today. Yes, we've got nine total today minus two, so I've got seven more today. So anyway, that's the challenge that we have. But with that, I don't think there's anything else I need to do other than recess. So with that, House Finance will be recessed. We'll be going to the floor and coming back as soon as we can. So with that, thank you very much. We'll be recessed at 9:55 a.m.